Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. In Texas right now is brewing one of the largest, most massive, and most complicated child custody hearings in the history of the United States. It is all coming out of the raid 3 weeks ago of the Yearning for Zion Ranch. That, of course, was the ranch of the polygamous sect, known as the Fundamentalist Church of Latter-day Saints. And this is going to be a very, very interesting process for the courts, for the Child Protective Services structures there in Texas, and of course for the families, and especially the children involved. Now, I've been receiving a good many inquiries from the press, and perhaps you've been receiving a good many questions from your friends and coworkers about how we should think about this. This is a very complicated issue because it mixes so many different elements. I mean, you're talking here about a situation in which the state raided this ranch, the Yearning for Zion Ranch, because of accusations that young girls are being sexually abused by being forced into marriages with older men, and not only marriages, but plural marriages, and that children were in danger. Thus, the state found its rationale, the state of Texas, to raid the ranch. The raid has taken place. And what they now have in the state of Texas is a large number of women who are mothers and an even larger number of children, and the state's not even sure who belongs to whom. We're going to be talking about this today because of what's going on in Texas and because of some of what's being said in the process. I want us to think as Christians here about how we should conceive of, analyze, and think about this issue. Because there are big questions here. What about parental rights? What about First Amendment freedoms of religious expression? Where does the state have a right to come in and say, that might be your belief, but that's not going to happen because we have a compelling state interest in the protection of human life and the protection of children to intervene at this point? What do we say to some who are now making the argument in Texas that a part of the problem here is that the parents had too much authority over the children? What do we say when some of the folks who are suggesting that they understand the problem say that the issue is that these women have been subservient to men and thus they have been abused by the fact that they were subservient in the sense of submitting themselves to their husbands? You know, there's an old saying in the law, and it comes down to this: hard cases make bad law. A lot of what you'll find on the statutory law books of your state or location, a lot of what you'll find there is there because of some problem, controversy, issue, tragedy, some development that required, or at least was perceived to require, some kind of legal codification. Folks, I want to tell you, what was going on, if what we've been told is true, at the Yearning for Zion Ranch is absolutely immoral and reprehensible. Undoubtedly, a good deal of what was going on there was illegal as well. But there is always the danger that in this incredibly difficult legal situation, precedents will be established that would affect not only members of the fundamentalist sect that is here, the Fundamentalist Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints at the Yearning for Zion Ranch, a polygamous sect. It can have to do with you and your family as well. The phone number to join the conversation is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. I'd like to hear from you at the very first level of our conversation about what you think is really important here. What does this story come down to? What does this tell you about the situation in the United States related to the family, religious freedom, any number of larger issues? I mean, one of the things that I find absolutely fascinating here is that the state seems to be adamant, the state of Texas, in saying that polygamy is not the issue. Polygamy is against the law, but that's not the issue. They wouldn't have raided this ranch if it were merely the issue of polygamy. They're suggesting it was the age of some of the brides that is the issue. Where does legitimate state interest begin, and where does it end? where do religious liberty issues really form an umbrella of protection around a family? And where is that umbrella to be pierced by legitimate state interest? These are very crucial questions. It's not just about Texas. It's not just about this offshoot Mormon sect. It could be about you and your church. Some of the things that were said by Child and Protective Services personnel in this case could be said about a lot of evangelical churches. We'll be talking about that today on the Albert Miller Program. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. First, a review of some issues in the news. The New York Times is out with an incredible story. I am amazed by the insight of the story. I'm amazed by the magnitude of the story. It's on the front page of today's edition, the headline, "At the Expense of All Others, Putin Picks a Church." Some of you have probably been aware of what's going on in Russia, but the resurgence of Russian nationalism is coming along with a resurgence of the Russian Orthodox Church. And what is happening in Russia, after its experiment with democracy, is that democracy, in terms of individual liberty, and that would include religious liberty, is giving way to a nationalist ideology. Now, at this point, the Russian Orthodox Church is not a state church. But as the New York Times, and through reporter Clifford Levy, is keen to observe, it's just about a state church. Listen to some of what's in this news story. It really is interesting. You have a de facto state religion, or official religion, says Mr. Levy. What you have is the Russian Orthodox Church warding off other Christian denominations that seem to offer the most significant competition for worshipers. They have all but banned proselytizing by Protestants and discouraged Protestant worship through a variety of harassing measures, according to dozens of interviews with government officials and religious leaders across Russia. Mr. Levy explains, this close alliance between the government and the Russian Orthodox Church has become a defining characteristic of Mr. Putin's tenure, a mutually reinforcing choreography that is usually described here as working, quote, in symphony, end quote. Now, if you've been watching the goings-on in Russia, as you observed what happened with the fall of the Soviet Union and then the breakup of the Soviet Union and then the Yeltsin years and later the Putin years, what you have seen is that in the background of Russian history is always the steady drumbeat of nationalism, of the Russias as a people, as it has historically been described. And now you have Russian nationalism coming forward. What is going on right now in Russia is not a movement toward democracy, but right now away from democracy. It is not toward greater individual liberty, but away from that. It is certainly not toward religious liberty, religious freedom, but towards a constriction. Mr. Putin makes frequent appearances, according to Mr. Levy, with the church's leader, Patriarch Alexei II. The Kremlin controls the national television networks, and it gives pride of place to the Russian Orthodox Church. Mr. Levy is also, I think, very insightful, the New York Times, to indicate that the church and the Putin regime share a common nationalistic ideology, which is dedicated to restoring Russia's might after the disarray that followed the end of the Soviet Union. The church's hostility toward Protestant groups, many of which are based in the United States who have large followings there, is tinged with the same anti-Western sentiment often voiced by Mr. Putin and senior officials. Now, one of the interesting things is that this is a situation in which the leaders of the Russian Orthodox Church and the leaders of the Putin regime both say it's not an official religion. And then they come back and say virtually the opposite with the same cadence. This is what they said. For instance, on local television in Moscow just a month ago, the city's chief Russian Orthodox priest gave a sermon. It was repeated over and over again on the television. And his theme was Protestant heretics. This is what he had to say, and I quote, "We deplore those who are led astray, those Jehovah's Witnesses, Baptists, Evangelicals, Pentecostals, and many others who cut Christ's robes like bandits, who are like soldiers who crucified Christ, who ripped apart Christ's holy coat." They went on again and again and again. And there are a lot of stories included in this very large and comprehensive article about specific cases of the infringement of religious liberty, the denial of religious freedom, and the presence of religious intolerance. You have those who are claiming that there is religious liberty, and then they'll come back and say in the next line, our Russian Orthodox religion is inviolable, and it should not be shaken. Now, this is just a reminder to us that religious liberty always takes constant vigilance and protection. It's also a reminder to us, as we think about what's going on in Russia, that just because a nation is no longer communist does not mean that it is democratic. In between communism and democracy, you'll find a large array of regimes, some of which lean into nationalism, and that's exactly what's going on right now in Russia. As you pray for the Russians, as you think about the evangelistic and missions opportunity and the needs there in Russia, think about a door that had been opened that is closing fast in the name of the Russian Orthodox Church, in the name of nationalism that would deny others religious liberty and the opportunity to evangelize. We're going to come back to talk about what has been going on in Texas and what it means for you and your family on the Albert Miller Program.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Moeller Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back to the Albert Moeller Program. The video is pretty stunning, as is the news coverage that has followed. This is the raid on the Yearning for Zion Ranch. It took place about 3 weeks ago there in Texas. And more than 400 children from the Fundamentalist Church of Latter-day Saints, they were removed from this facility. And over the last couple of weeks, there has been a very frantic controversy there in Texas, especially in the courts and governmental structures, about how these mothers and children are to be handled as all this is sorted out. And at one point, the judge in this case said that he wanted to separate the mothers and the children. Now, a part of his problem is they're not actually sure whose children some of these children are. They're actually talking about using DNA testing to be able to determine. Part of the complex behind that is polygamy, plural marriages, one man with several wives. This is a very difficult situation, but I'm going to make it much more difficult for you. I want you to listen carefully to some of the pleadings, some of the words that came as the state of Texas produced witnesses for the hearings related to what should happen with these children. And listen to this. Dr. Bruce Perry, described as a psychiatrist and an authority on children in cults, said that the girls might claim to freely decide to marry young, but they really had no choice because the entire system of belief is coercive. Now, they're talking about these young girls. The state of Texas says that it has raided the ranch, not so much because of polygamy as just a fact unto itself, but because they had received word that a 16-year-old girl had complained that she had been forced into a marriage and was being thus sexually abused. And thus, in the interest of her life and health, the state raided the facility and removed everyone until they can figure out what's going on, even as there was one perpetrator, or at least a suspect, they wanted to arrest. And I understand that he was later nabbed in Arizona. Now, what Dr. Bruce Perry said there is something that most of us can pretty well understand. Remember, here you had young girls who were raised from the time they were born to be involved in this polygamist offshoot of Mormonism. And, you know, just to make sure we say everything rightly here, the Mormon Church, which when established supported polygamy ever since the late 19th century, has not. And so there would be Mormons out there who would hear this who would say, be honest, the Mormon Church does not now promote polygamy. There's a question as to whether it still does as a theological ideal, but nonetheless, there's no doubt that that is a part of the entrance requirement of the state of Utah into the Union, that polygamy was denied. So this is an offshoot of the Mormon Church. And what you have here is a situation in which these girls are being forced into marriage. And let's just, by the way, say they weren't forced. In other words, does the state, does the government have the right to say a 12-year-old girl, 13, 14-year-old girl shouldn't get married? I think the state does. I think most of us would agree that is a reasonable protection of children. So when Dr. Bruce Perry, described here as a psychiatrist, says in the hearing, he's there on behalf of the state, the state's interest in raiding this facility and removing these children. He said the girls might claim to freely decide to marry young, but they really had no choice because the entire system of belief is coercive. I could see where that statement might very well be true. But listen to his next statement. He said this: obedience is a very important element of their belief system. Compliance is being godly. It's part of their honoring God. End quote. Well, it's no longer, then, just about the fundamentalist Church of Latter-day Saints. If obedience is a problem, that's pretty much going to include anyone who has a claim upon biblical Christianity. You know, is the state of Texas saying here that the requirement that children obey parents is a problem? Because it seems to be, at least it seems to some, that some people involved in this case have suggested that that is an issue and is itself part and parcel of abusive behavior or coercive behavior. Now listen to this. Child welfare investigator Angie Voss, representing the state's Child Protective Services, said that the religious teachings of the FLDS basically amount to abuse because the women are subservient. Quote, "This is a population of women who appear to have a problem making a decision on their own," end quote. Could that standard, we might ask, you know, could this be applied well outside this group in Texas to anyone such as those who would represent, for instance, the Southern Baptist Convention, who by our own confession of faith would testify that we believe that there's a difference between men and women and husbands and wives, and that wives are to graciously submit to the leadership of their husband. You know, are we to understand that the Southern Baptist Convention now with, I don't know how many, 14, 15, 16 million members, many of them, by the way, in Texas, millions of them in Texas, will be considered under some circumstances in the same way as this cult? It's going to be very interesting to see how all of this unfolds. But, you know, as I look at this, I see a legitimate state interest in acting here. I'm not on the ground there. I wouldn't claim to be a law enforcement expert. I am not an attorney. But I think most of us looking at this would say, you know, if this is a group that was putting 12, 13, 14-year-old girls into a position where they were supposedly married to men in a situation of wives, frankly, singular or plural, and the marriages were being consummated and they were expected to fulfill all the wifely duties, clearly we've got a problem here. But now what does the state of Texas have on its hands? It has on its hands over 100 women and over 400 children, and it's trying to figure out what to do. And some of the people, I fear, who are giving them advice have agendas that go far beyond the legitimate state interest in the state invading this facility. I'd like to know what you think about this. I've had so many people ask me, how should we be thinking about this? Should we be concerned about this? You know, everything's on the table here. Everything from polygamy to early marriage to the roles of men and women, to the roles and authority of parents over their children, religious liberty. You know, folks, you don't get too many cases that could involve so many tripwires as this one. This is firing up every single warning light on our board as we think about it intellectually, because it's all on the line. So even if you said, well, I haven't given that 2 minutes thought, well, you better be giving it some thought, because some of the arguments used here could, under very different circumstances, be applied perhaps to you, not just to this situation in Texas. The phone number to join the conversation is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. I'd really like to hear from you. Maybe out there are many of you in Texas listening to this program, and you're close to what's going on there. And the state of Texas has got, it's had experience on this. Texas Monthly Magazine just this month is putting out a major historical survey of what happened 15 years ago this month. That was the Branch Davidian situation there with leader David Koresh, also there in Texas. And, you know, when people looked at what was going on there, I don't remember 15 years ago that there were many child custody or religious liberty issues that most Americans thought were very germane. Furthermore, I didn't hear too many people suggesting that this case, the Branch Davidians, that is, 15 years ago, could establish precedents that could really curtail religious liberty far down the road for others. But the situation with the FLDS, the raid on the Waiting for Zion, Yearning for Zion Ranch, that's a very different matter, because it could turn out that these precedents could be very, very dangerous. I say that with sympathy to a judge and a court system that now has to figure out, with almost Solomonic wisdom required, what to do with all these mothers and all these children when at this point they don't even know who belongs to whom. The phone number is 877-893-TALK. That's 877-893-8255. Back with your calls This is the Albert Mueller Program.
Listening to the Albert Mueller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmueller.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mueller.
Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. So let me ask you, when do you think it would be justified for a government to invade a private domicile or compound such as the Yearning for Zion Ranch? What would you believe should have to be presented as the problem? Is polygamy enough? Polygamy involving female minors? Claims of child abuse? Just claims that this is a group that believes that obedience is an absolute premium in order to honor God, where women are, as judged by secular authorities, understood to be subservient to men? I mean, what is the threshold here? Why don't you think this through? Because this is the kind of conversation I'm getting all the time. This is the question that's coming to me in recent days all the time. National media and others have been talking to me saying, you know, what's justified and what's not? I'm trying to think this through. I've shared with you some of the things that that I think we ought to think about. But I'm quite certain out there among intelligent listeners, there are going to be a lot of things you think that really ought to be put on the table here. I'd love to hear from you. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Now, let's talk about some related cases. Let's say, because this also came up recently, let's say that you have a 14-year-old girl, and the issue is not sexual. It's not marital. It's medical. Say you have a 14-year-old girl, and she needs a blood transfusion. Her parents are Jehovah's Witnesses, and they believe that blood transfusions violate Scripture. She will live, or has a good chance to live, if she has the transfusion, but medical authorities say she will surely die if she does not. Now, in virtually every legal jurisdiction in this country, there is some mechanism for medical authorities to go to the law and say, we need for the law to step in, for the government to step in, and contravene parental authority here in order for the state to grant permission, which means the state taking temporary custody of the child in order that the state would act as a de facto parent in order to allow the blood transfusion, with the idea then that the parents actually resume their full parental rights at some point in the future. Now, I think most people, and I'll say this just as honestly as I can, I think most people, including most Christians, looking at that would say, you know, the state has to have some kind of tripwire where its involvement becomes justified. It better be pretty high. It better not be as to whether the child would be, you know, vaccinated with the human papillomavirus vaccine or not. That doesn't sound like the right place. It better be not as to whether the child is given this antibiotic or that antibiotic. It better not be whether we're going to go with what this doctor says or with what that doctor says. But if it's a matter of life or death and the medical establishment is certain that a blood transfusion is needed, I think most Christian parents would say, you know, that sounds right. But, you know, that slippery slope is really dangerous. Now, I'm not saying that's not justified, but in a lot of situations, something's justified that can be used as a precedent to try to justify something else. And that's where we really have to think carefully about this. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Let's get some things down. Let's just get some biblical parameters set. Number one, let's take the P word. Let's put it right out there in public. Let's talk about it, because this is a symptom of our postmodern confusion as well. And the word is polygamy. Fascinating. Let me tell you why polygamy is of such interest here. It's because when you're talking about the fundamentalist group known here, and I'm using the word they put in their title, I'm not using that as a modifier or an adjective. I don't think that's usually very wise. I'm using it because it's a part of the legal name of the group, the Fundamentalist Church of Latter-day Saints, in which they're establishing themselves as the continuation, as they see it, of the original Mormonism. They consider the contemporary Mormon church to be apostate. But you start looking at that, and you realize that polygamy has old roots. And then you read in the Bible where you find polygamy. But polygamy is illegal in this country because the legal justification has been to preserve the integrity of marriage. But, you know, in a world in which all of a sudden we now have calls for same-sex marriage, as Professor Jonathan Turley at George Washington University and so many other legal authorities have demonstrated, you know, the case for same-sex marriage is the case for polygamy. If marriage can be redefined as to be a man and a man rather than a man and a woman, then why not a man with plural wives? You know, I think what we find very interesting here is that the state of Texas seems to be going out of its way to say, look, polygamy isn't the issue. It's against the law, but we didn't raid the Yearning for Zion Ranch because of polygamy. We raided the Yearning for Zion Ranch because some of the girls were underage and thus being abused. You see, I believe that the Bible very clearly says that polygamy is wrong. Jesus says that it was meant from the beginning for marriage to be a man and a woman. That's only the first of the issues of our concern in this case. Back with your calls. I'm Albert Mohler.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mohler Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. Hard cases do make bad law. And boy, this is a hard case. With sympathy, even as I am very concerned about what I've heard, at least part of what I've heard from this Texas courtroom and the legal process, I have to say I have enormous concern and sympathy for a judge who has something like 100 women and over 400 children trying to figure out what in the world to do in a situation in which there's now a complete breakdown of the normal parental relationship, custody, and all the rest. This is a very difficult situation. I want to know what you think about it. What should intelligent Christians be thinking and asking about this whole issue? We're talking about the Texas raid on the Yearning for Zion Ranch, and we're talking about what is right now front page news, certainly not only in Texas, but in many other parts of this country. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Let's go to John, listening on XM170 in Jacksonville, Illinois. What do you think, John?
Well, first off, let's pray for the judge that has to make the decisions on these children. Second off, as a Christian, no, what they were doing there as far as these young girls being forced into these marriages, if that's what was going on, no, that is definitely wrong, and these children need to be rescued. That's just it. They are children. They are protected by the laws of the state of Texas and of the United States of America.
Yeah, John, that's a very good point. And I think there would be widespread, not unanimous, in this country unanimous is too much to ask for, but I think there would be overwhelming support for what you just said, that the state had a compelling state interest. A justified legal interest, humanitarian interest in intervening in this case. No doubt about that, I think, in my mind. You start looking at the case here, and as we started in the last segment, I mean, you start it with polygamy, got a problem. The state of Texas says that's not why they raided. I'd say it would have been justified on that ground, frankly, but that wasn't the presenting reason, but rather the age and the minority status of some of the girls involved in these plural marriages. And by the way, this stuff is really, really ugly, really ugly. I mean, for instance, you realize that around half of the children born into this community are boys. When these boys reach adolescence, they are considered as competitors to the older men who are in control, and they have nowhere to go. And so around these groupings where you have these radical polygamous sects, offshoots of Mormonism, you find a lot of adolescent boys and young men who basically have been kicked out because they are sexual threats. Competitors to the men who want these girls as plural wives. That's just sick, 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 any way you look at it. And, you know, you start looking at parental responsibility and the rights of parents here. Yes, I'm very concerned about some of what I'm hearing out of this Texas courtroom. But at the same time, I've got to say, look, when you've got parents raising their boys to say there's no place for you when you reach puberty because, you know, you're now going to be a threat. And when you have the same parent saying to young girls, you're being raised in order to be a child bride for a man, there's just something deeply wrong there. And you can see the confusion. I don't know if you've been following much of this, but when you look into the faces of these women, the moms have actually gone on television. This is a group that does not want publicity. And, you know, I almost felt physical pain watching those mothers on, for instance, they were on the Larry King program, because you know how much they did not want to be there. And I do not doubt for a moment the love for their babies. I mean, they were crying. They're brokenhearted because they've been separated from their children. You know, whose heart would not break for that? So why doesn't the state of Texas just let them go back and reestablish and be united with their children? Well, the state now has the children. They don't even know to whom some of them belong. You know, you just have to look at this and say, I don't know how someone short of Solomon can try to figure this out. But if we are going to have an intelligent Christian conversation about this, we better start isolating some issues. And I think the hardest issue is when the state does have a compelling, legitimate interest to intervene in a situation where otherwise we would say, hey, this is a religious liberty issue. Stay away from it. And that's very important. You know, as a Baptist, believing in religious liberty, I have to come back again and again to the fact that we do not believe the state has the right to say what we must believe or can believe or what our practices must be. But we also understand that even that central Bill of Rights, constitutional right, which we believe is a matter of basic human dignity, even as that is one of, you know, Roosevelt's four freedoms. You start looking at how that's been codified throughout our American history, realize that even that has limitations. You know, limitations such as if you are in prison and you say that you're a Rastafarian and that you're supposed to smoke illegal substances and you claim a First Amendment right to do that. You know, you have a decision, the Smith decision, I believe it is, that says, no, that's not so. You don't have a constitutional right to do that. You know, you don't have a constitutional right to commit crime in the name of your religious practice, your religious conviction. And I think most of us would say, well, that just makes sense. Yeah, but what happens when the law is changed so that doing what you do now is then illegal? You know, what if someone says it's illegal to spank your children? You know, we talked about that just on this program just recently. You know, there are some in the Child Protective Services world that would say that any form of punishment, physical punishment, simply abuse by definition, regardless of how light or how hard, regardless of how frequent or how infrequent, regardless of anything. I mean, all of us understand that there is a clear situation where a child's been abused, where there has been not only hurt, but harm. That's a very crucial distinction. You start looking at that and you say, yeah, the state had a right to intervene there. Not only that, the state had a duty to intervene there. But, you know, just on the other side of that, the state really better stay out of it. You know, I'll tell you one thing. It really strikes me as I think about this. One thing that strikes me is that we as Christians in the local church, you better be really, really careful in the local church to talk to each other about these things and to be accountable, mutually accountable to Christ, together on these things, such that we're really thinking these things through and we're ready when we understand, well, here is a church member and here's a situation in which the law has intervened. You know, is this legitimate or not? You know, is this a situation in which we should all protest? Is this a situation in which we should say, hey, you know, not only should the state have intervened, we should have intervened in church discipline long before the state got there? All I know right now is that there is a judge in Texas who's got a job which has to be beyond anything he ever signed up for when he went to the bench. Not only that, but just at the human level, I think of all of those children separated from their parents. Do I believe their parents are deluded? Yes, but they're far more deluded in my mind spiritually than even the polygamy and all the rest. I think it gets back to their basic understanding and worldview. But, you know, you look at that and you say, anyone with a heart has to have a heart that's breaking over the tragedy in this case. I'll be right back. You're listening to the Albert Miller Program. Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. We'll be watching this case in Texas with you. And if you have thoughts about this, be sure to send them to me. Just write me at mail@albertmueller.com or go to albertmueller.com and send in your question or comment. I always love to hear from you. Big news coming out of Washington today. I want to end with this. After 13 years of struggling to come up with an adequate legislative answer to the problem of genetic testing and the potential of discrimination, the United States Senate voted today by unanimous consent to pass a measure that would prevent any discrimination on the basis of information drawn from genetic test results. Francis Collins, director of the Human Genome Research Institute, said this is a day for celebration. I think the American people can breathe a sigh of relief that the fear of genetic discrimination, which has basically been a cloud over our future, has been dealt with. End quote. The bill passed, as we have just said, unanimously in the Senate today. It is expected to go to the House and pass by unanimous consent there next week. A presidential signature is expected perhaps by the end of next week. After 13 years, this is fast track, and it is long overdue. Among the miracles, complex, morally complex miracles of modern medical technology are these genetic tests. And we've talked many times about the morality of this knowledge, even the spirituality and psychology of this knowledge. What do you do when you know certain things that you might have a propensity to develop, maybe even an assurance? But this particular legislation prevents an employer or a health insurance company from discriminating against you because they say, hey, there's a test here and you might develop cancer or have a stroke or be a candidate for a heart attack at some point in the future, and you're just too much of a risk, so we're not going to take you. You know, part of the rationale behind this legislation is that people would be afraid to have the tests taken and performed if this information could be used against them in a discriminatory fashion. And this is good news. Folks, there aren't many things of great moral consequence that pass the United States Senate by unanimous consent. So this is something of a red-letter day, because you have a very significant piece of legislation on which every member present of the United States Senate was in agreement. And I think when you start looking, for instance, at the liberal-conservative divide, the red state-blue state divide, you start looking at other things, you realize that on some issues at least, some kind of great moral consensus can develop. In this case, there is one. And you have to wonder for how long that would be true. It's good news today. And let's hope they follow through in the House. And let's hope this bill gets to the president and he signs it very, very soon. Back tomorrow for Intelligent Christian Conversation. I'm Albert Mohler.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmohler.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmohler.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.